Can we claim watching a movie as CPD? Hello and welcome to this week's Urgent Bite, brought to you by the Royal New Zealand College of Urgent Care. My name is Guy Melrose, and today I have a small nugget of potentially useful information I've come across after going down a small rabbit hole inspired by a movie. I've always been fond of cinema. As I write this, I'm looking at my bookshelf, which contains my collection of Empire magazines, which I started to collect in the early 90s. To me, films are escapist entertainment, able to inspire, amuse, scare, transport, forewarn, irritate, or simply pass the time. Certainly movies can educate, especially when it comes to a documentary or a well-made biography, but one thing that they're not to be relied upon is to provide quality medical education. Just off the top of my head, I can think of the drug overdose in Pulp Fiction, being treated with an adrenaline shot delivered through the sternum into the heart, resulting in a Lazarus-like awakening. Or on a similar note, seeing Nicolas Cage use a large skewer to deliver the antidote to VX nerve gas, which for the movie purposes is atropine, through his own sternum directly into his heart. And I always chuckle when I see Mel Gibson reduce his dislocated shoulder in Lethal Weapon 2 by simply hitting his chest against a set of lockers. Not a standard approach, you must admit. The whole premise of the Jason Statham movie Crank is that he must maintain a heart rate above a certain level in order to prevent a poison from killing him, resulting in him spending the whole movie trying to keep his heart rate up in increasingly bizarre ways. And we can think of laughable demonstrations of CPR in almost all movies, and we expect a level of over-dramatisation from Hollywood when it comes to how they represent nearly all injuries. I mean, I always laugh when I see, particularly Roger Moore's incarnation of Bond, be knocked out cold by a swift chop to the back of the neck. And then they come to, an unspecified time later, in an aeroplane or a holding cell, rubbing the back of their neck as if nothing had happened. I think we might have all been considering a few things in between this, such as maintaining the airway, imaging their head, etc., and we would probably have concerns for ongoing observation. But Bond merely rubs it off and gets back into the action. I've recently watched the film Black Widow, and there's a scene in that where Scarlett Johansson's character falls off a building, hitting every fire escape and walkway on the way down, and then simply lands on her feet, from maybe 15 stories high, and just carries on. As she fell, I thought, chest trauma, spinal trauma, head trauma, calcaneal fractures, but no, barely a scratch. Later in the film, she's in a car that rolls at high speed and crashes down into a subway whilst on its roof, and she simply climbs out with barely a limp. Talk about self-extricating at the scene. There are, of course, times that films get things a little bit right, but they try and make things a little more dramatic in the process. In Casino Royale, Daniel Craig's Bond is poisoned by Digitalis. He is seen giving himself an injection, and then there is a tense moment with the world's smallest defibrillator, all played out in dramatic fashion. I suspect a more realistic management of this overdose would have been a little less compelling for the audience. And therein lies the issue. Medicine is rarely as exciting as the movies. We accept this hyper-realised state of things, in all areas of life depicted on celluloid, because we watch films for escapism. You rarely see correct procedures when it comes to flying planes. Certainly traffic laws are rarely obeyed, and I'm sure that courts are never the same as they are in A Few Good Men. So unless it's an educational video, or a fact-based documentary, we're not really watching films to learn. Having said that, I did recently get inspired to do a bit of CPD reading, having watched a film which, coincidentally, features an actor who might have contributed to a number of people pursuing a career in medicine. I'm referring here to Dr. Doug Ross, aka George Clooney, who famously inserted a surgical airway while in the middle of a storm before transporting the patient to hospital in the back of a news helicopter, live on air, while wearing a tuxedo. But on this occasion, George Clooney, was appearing in a movie called Three Kings, alongside Ice Cube, Mark Wahlberg, and Spike Jonze. The story of a group of soldiers seeking gold in the Iraqi desert sometime after Desert Storm. At one point, Marky Mark Wahlberg takes a gunshot to the chest and collapses with difficulty breathing. Dr. Ross diagnoses a tension pneumothorax, and then with the help of some internal camera shots that look like something out of a dissection lab, decompresses it with a cannula in the second intercostal space, mid-clavicular line. It was a surprisingly accurate scene. Now, seeing this made me think to review this technique, as it is not something I've had to do in anger, but I have been taught it on multiple occasions on recess courses. There are a number of ways to manage a tension pneumothorax, the priority being the fastest available way to release the tension. A chest drain is the definitive treatment, and there are a number of specific devices, one of which I found called the spear, which pre-hospital teams may carry. And the St. John Clinical Practice Guidelines advise, if able, to do a finger thoracostomy in the fifth intercostal space, mid-axillary line. But the cannula decompression in the second intercostal space, mid-clavicular line, is the one we will most likely have access to if we're ever called upon to treat a tension pneumothorax in an urgent care clinic. So I started by reviewing the page in the urgent care course training material, and it directed me to a YouTube video by Larry Melick. I watched a few of their videos and have linked to the one I found most interesting in the show notes, which is titled Needle Thoracostomy Pearls. In it, he discusses with a colleague about the depth needed to ensure a needle has got into the pleura, and they reference a paper that showed the need of about 6.5 centimetres to get there. They say, in their ED experience, that patients often arrive with needles that are ineffective because they're not in deep enough, and they show the difference in length of the cannulas. So my little take-home from this movie-inspired CPD crawl is that we need to make sure we have the appropriate length cannula in hand if we end up having to decompress a tension pneumothorax. So perhaps we should check our recess trolleys, just in case. And for all these rare but important actions that we might be called upon to take, we should make sure we review the guidelines or videos or take the opportunity to ask the experts during our annual recess courses, because when the adrenaline is up and you are stressed, your brain can easily forget where things are and what you need to do. In the same way that pilots practice emergencies that they hope they never have to do, so too we should keep this important information near the front of our brain by reviewing the latest evidence and running through things in our heads or with our colleagues. That is why we do CPD. You might choose to use our new urgent care curriculum as a means of choosing which areas you need to touch up on, or you might find yourself inspired by watching a late 90s action film. But whatever inspires you to refresh areas of weakness or areas of interest is good for guiding you towards useful, quality CPD. Now make sure you check out the show notes where I've linked to the video, which is definitely worth watching, and it also references the paper, which you can go on to read, that identified the depth that you need to go in with the cannula. And we'll be back again next week with another podcast. I look forward to seeing you all then. But for now, thanks for listening.